But a lot of things also come under this umbrella label of anti-gravity that we can also talk about, things which might be more doable, okay? So anti-gravity could be any force that opposes gravity, okay, like magnetic levitation, you know about maglev trains and things like
that.
You can produce a magnetic field that is so powerful that it will levitate ordinary objects, even living things. You can actually levitate frogs and mice in a strong enough magnetic field. Okay.
See, I happen to think that a fellow by the name of Edward Leed Scullin, who is dead in this country, David, in an area called Homestead, Florida, built what was called the Coral Castle.
Okay.
And he moved incredibly large blocks of coral, stone, and nobody saw how he did it. It was impossible for him to do it by himself.
Right.
And he had a little tripod, which I think he merely used to kind of shift the blocks when he had them in place. I think this guy knew something about magnetism or gravity.
Well, it's, you know, at least in theory, it is possible. I mean, even general relativity allows you to produce a gravitomagnetic force, okay? Spinning objects very, very fast will produce this, okay? And it really is the basis of many claims for anti-gravity devices, I think, is this link between magnetism and gravity. And it is actually allowed by general relativity. So, yeah, there's that possibility there, okay? Now, there's a couple of other phenomena, really, that come under this heading of anti-gravity. One would be gravitational shielding, where you come up with a material. And there was a science fiction story by H.G. Wells written around the turn of the 20th century, First Men in the Moon, where he covers this spacecraft in this thing called Cavorite and opens and closes shutters.
Exactly.
And allows his spacecraft to move in any direction. Okay, now you could come up with a material like that, or some other way of shielding gravitation. That would work like an anti-gravity device. Any kind of gravitational modification is anti-gravity. Really, any anomaly in gravity could be considered to be anti-gravity. So we're dealing with a big subject here, and quite a murky one. There's real science in there. In fact, Einstein himself was the first person to stick an anti-gravity term into his equation. He called it the cosmological constant. Okay, and that's really an anti-gravity force. But there's a lot of rumor, a lot of speculation. It's hard to separate fact from fiction. I mean, a lot of stories, for example, that the Nazis developed anti-gravity. And, well, what do we know for certain about that? We know that they were certainly developing high-technology devices. They were the first to come up with a liquid-fueled rocket, you know, high-performance.
Sure, and that was, you know, 60 years ago.
This is, you know, we're talking in the 1940s. They developed a large liquid propellant rocket, the V-2, deployed it to disastrous effect. They were the first to build, you know, a functional jet aircraft. They were working on nuclear weapons. So they were cutting edge, okay? Now that's where, you know, we can say that that's fact, okay? They would also, it's reasonable to suppose, be looking at anything and everything in the final years of the war to turn the direction in which the war was heading. That's what militaries do, right?
They came very close, David, didn't they?
Yeah, they came very, very close indeed. So it's not unreasonable, you know, just from a scientist point of view, okay, whatever, you know, else we can look in the speculation side of things, that they would have considered anti-gravity. They would have known about Einstein's work in this field. They would have known that, you know, there were possibilities there.
Let me make this
very clear.
Right.
There is, and you know this, George, and a lot of people listening will, there's a huge difference between advanced aircraft, you know, like the Messerschmitt 262,
sure,
say, or the V-2, and anti-gravity devices. And on one side, we're talking about cutting-edge technology. On the other, we're talking about speculative physics. So we have to stick that in there as a caution before we move on.
Okay? And you know, I think we as people were lucky that the Nazis had so many things going on, because they had their scientists.
Yeah.
You know, the right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing by design.
Yeah.
You know, they had a portion of their think force working on anti-gravity, another working on the atomic bomb, another working on fuel, how to make that. And thank God they didn't all get together, because they might have gotten the bomb before we did.
Well, and they had a way to deploy it, which was the other thing.
Right.
They could have stuck it on the top of the V. 1942, and one of those devices dropped on the center of London, you know, in 1944, say.
Goodbye London.
Goodbye London, you know, goodbye the British war effort, basically. And, you know, so that would have been... But back to anti-gravity, I know how this whole story goes, and I know the link with the flying discs and all the rest of it, and it's a very, very interesting story. But, you know, you've got to do the research carefully, and there's been some good stuff done in this, and there's also, we've got to look where also we're looking at false leads as well. Now, I can just give you one example of this, if you like.
Sure.
You'll know that the book by Nick Cook, The Hunt for Zero Point.
Yes.
Great book. It in many ways well researched. Written by a guy who's obviously knows his stuff in aerospace. He's the editor at Jane's Defense Weekly, mm-hmm. so he knows his stuff on aerospace. But you know, even there, we've got to be really careful. You know, his theme was the Nazis were trying. He was trying to find out basically what the Nazis were doing with this anti-gravity stuff. Okay, he gets in touch with a Polish investigator, Igor Witkowski, I believe his name was, who says he's got information about experiments carried out toward the end of the war by the Nazis, and mentions this device called the Nazi Bell, which basically works on rotation. We were talking about this, that, you know, general relativity allows this gravitomagnetic force that involves rotation. So far, it's reasonable, okay? He tells Nick Cook that there's the remains of a device near an abandoned mine in Poland, near a Polish village, the Wenceslas mine. And Nick Cook goes there, takes pictures of it. It's a circular concrete structure. It looks a bit like Stonehenge, you know, with the...
Yes, very, very old-looking, too.
Yeah, it's like, you know, about 30 yards across, a big structure, uprights, lintels, circular formation. Cook visits the place, takes photos, and in his book suggests that this is actually the remains of an anti-gravity test rig, okay? So far, you know, that's not unreasonable, okay?
Agreed.
And I'm just tracing this one. I'm not into debunking, you know that, George. I'm into open-minded.
Absolutely.
Okay. But I color it with the sort of scientific perspective. I'm prepared to look at any story, and I'm not interested in whether it is outlandish or not. There's far more outlandish things in mainstream science than what many other people talk about.
Well, I've got to tell you, David, just in talking to you over the last few years, you've got more of an open mind as a scientist than almost anybody I've talked to. So,
well, that's what I try to do. I'm trying to tread that fine line between mainstream science and pure speculation. And I'm not trying to knock anybody's work in this. And all I'm looking for is the truth. I'm not interested in debunking people just for the sake of
Fair enough.
Because that's stupid, because then you throw out the baby with the bathwater and you maybe miss that gem of inspiration or that little piece of data that leads you onto a new path.